shoots me a sad smile, then looks out over the water. I had Richard. He's such a good man. I wish he'd be happy again. I think of my stepfather and worry. My mother was everything to him. What will give him joy now that she's gone? I'll never be a grandmother, she says thoughtfully. I died young and in my prime. That's not so terrible, is it? How can you ask me that? I let the tears flow. I searched my soul all day because I couldn't cry. Now that they're here, I welcome them. It feels as if a dam has burst. Don't cry, honey. She stops and hugs me, filling the air I breathe with the scent of her perfume. You'll see that... I woke with a gasp, my body racked by a hard jerk of surprise. Lucky whimpered and pawed at me, kneading into my stomach. I stroked his velvety head with one hand and swiped at my eyes with the other, but they were dry. The pain of my dream was already fading into a distant memory.
Come here,
Gideon murmured, his voice a rough, warm beacon in our moonlit bedroom. His arms came around me, pulling me back against him. Turning into him, I sought his mouth and found it, sinking into him with a lush, deep kiss. Surprise held him motionless a moment, and then his hand was cupping the back of my head, holding me in place as he took over. I tangled my legs with his, feeling the coarse brush of hair, the deliciously warm skin, and the powerful muscles underneath. The soft, rhythmic stroking of his tongue soothed and aroused me. No one kissed like Gideon. The coaxing demand of his mouth was searingly sexual, yet it was also tender, reverent. His lips were both firm and soft, and he used them to tease, to brush gently against my own. Reaching between us, I cupped his penis in my hand, stroking with a demand that answered his. He swelled to my touch, lengthening until the broad head pushed up beneath the elastic of his waistband. He groaned, his hips thrusting into my caress.
Ava.
I heard the question in the way he said my name. Make me feel, I whispered. His hand slid beneath my shirt, his fingers drifting feather-light across my belly until he palmed my breast. He squeezed, plumping the aching flesh, before his clever fingers gripped my nipple. With a decadent knowledge of my body, Gideon rolled and tugged the hard, tight point of my breast, the relentless pressure and pulling sending pulses of need through my entire body. I moaned, aroused, desperate. My legs tightened around his so I could rub my damp sex against his thigh.
Does your pretty cunt ache, Angel?
He nibbled at the corner of my lips, the words a seduction all their own.
What does it need? My tongue? My fingers? My cock?
Gideon? I whimpered shamelessly when he pulled away, my arms reaching for him as he rose above me. He hummed a soft sound of reassurance and dropped Lucky carefully to the floor. Then his hands were at my hips, pulling my underwear down to my knees.
You haven't answered me, Ava. What do you want me to put into your greedy little cunt? All of the above?
Yes, I gasped. Everything. A moment later, my legs were in the air and his dark head was lowering to the sensitized flesh between my thighs. I held my breath, waiting. Folded as I was, I couldn't see. The hot, wet velvet of his tongue slid between the tender folds of my sex. Oh, God! I arched into a rigid bow. Gideon purred. I struggled, trying to lift my hips up to the ecstasy of his wicked mouth. Gripping my thighs, he held me in place, tasting me at the pace he wanted, licking over and around the slick opening, taunting me with my hunger to feel his tongue inside me. His lips circled my throbbing clit, his mouth suckling, the flat of his tongue rubbing across that sensitive pleasure point. Please, I didn't care that he made me beg. The more I gave him, the more he gave back to me. But he made me wait as he savored me, his hair caressing the tender skin at the back of my thighs, his tongue massaging my clit with the faintest of pressures. I pressed my hands to my face. That feels so good. Don't stop. My mouth fell open when he licked lower, dipping the merest fraction into the trembling clutch of my body, then lower still, rimming the rosette that quivered beneath the silky caress. Ugh! I gasped, half mad with the barrage of sensation after hours of numbness. His growl shivered through me. My body jerked as he finally gave me what I wanted, his stiffened tongue pushing into my slick heat with a slow, delicious thrust. Yes, I gasped. Fuck me! His mouth was exquisite, the source of all pleasure and torment. His tongue wicked in its sensual assault, plunging between the clenching delicate muscles. Gideon ate me with tautly driven focus, so avid and greedy that I writhed with the incredible ecstasy pulsing through my body. There was pressure, and then his thumb slid into my rear and began fucking the tender opening. The fullness there contrasted with the rhythmic thrusts of his tongue. My core tensed. I hovered tautly on the precipice of orgasm. I screamed his name, my body on fire, my skin hot and damp. I was alive with pleasure, burning with it. The climax shattered me, broke me into pieces. But Gideon wouldn't relent, his tongue sliding up to lash my clit. One orgasm rolled into the next. Sobbing, coming hard and endlessly, I pressed my fists to my eyes. No more, I pleaded hoarsely, my limbs trembling hard as my core spasmed with yet another rush. I can't take any more. I felt the mattress dip as he moved, one hand holding my ankles. I heard the snap of his waistband as he shoved his boxer briefs down.
How do you want it?
He asked darkly.
Slow and sweet, fast and rough.
Oh, God. I forced my answer past dry lips. Deep. Hard. He came over me, pushing my legs back until I was bent in half.
I love you.
He vowed fiercely, gruffly. The lush crest of his thick cock surged into my sex, stroking over tissues already swollen and tender. Folded as I was, my legs bound by my underwear around my knees, it was tight inside me, and he was so big. I was stretched by his girth, my sensitive flesh stinging from the forcefulness of his possession, and he still had more to give. Groaning my name, Gideon swiveled his hips, pulling out, pushing in, working the heavy shaft deeper.
"Are you feeling this, Angel?"
he demanded, his voice gruff with desire. You're all I feel, I moaned, needing to move to take more, but he kept me restrained, his body fucking me with destructive expertise. The feel of him, so hard, the relentless, leisurely thrusts. My fingers grasped at the sheets, my sex rippled frantically around him, grasping at the wide head of his penis with ravenous greed. Every withdrawal left me empty, every thick, hot slide forced pleasure through my veins like a drug.
Ava, Christ.
Gideon loomed over me in the moonlight, a darkly sexual fallen angel. His beautiful face was hard with lust as his eyes gleamed down at me, his arms strained with unappeased need, his torso chiseled by the tension in his muscles.
You keep sucking on my dick with that tight cunt of yours and you'll make me come. Is that what you want, Angel? You want me to fill you up before you take it all?
No! I exhaled in a rush, willing my core to relax, its eager tightening. He rolled his hips, stroking into me, his breath hissing as I took more of him.
God, Ava, Your cunt loves my cock.
Reaching for the headboard, Gideon stretched over me, my legs trapped between us. Fully exposed and tilted back for his pleasure, I was helpless to do more than watch as he straightened his hips and sank the last few inches of his penis into me. The sound that left me was a harsh wail, the pleasure so intense it hurt. Distantly, I heard Gideon curse, felt his powerful body shudder.
"You good?" he bit out, his teeth grinding.
I tried to catch my breath, my lungs expanding as much as they were able.
"Eva," he growled my name, "are you good?"
Unable to speak, I reached for his hips, my fingers catching in his boxer briefs. I had a moment to think how hot that was, that he hadn't bothered to undress either one of us. Then he started fucking, his hips pistoning in a relentless tempo, his long, thick cock plunging and withdrawing from root to tip in rapid-fire thrusts. Supporting his weight entirely with his arms and the tips of his toes, he powered into me, his rigid penis nailing me straight into the mattress. I came so hard my vision went black, my body seized with pleasure so intense I was locked in it, suspended in the powerful waves of erotic sensation. I was inundated by the ferocious surge of my climax, my skin tingled from head to toe. Gideon paused on a downstroke, grinding into me, giving my body the steely length of his penis to grasp. My sex spasmed ecstatically around that delicious hardness, gripping him hungrily.
"Fuck!" Gideon bit out. "You're milking my dick so hard!"
I shook violently, biting to breathe. The moment I sagged into the mattress, replete, Gideon pulled his cock out of my trembling slit and left the bed. Bereft, I lifted a hand to him. "Where are you going?"
"Hang on."
He shoved his boxer briefs all the way off. He was still hard, his cock rising high and proud, slick from my orgasm. But I wasn't wet with his.
"You didn't come."
I was too languid to help when he stripped me of my underwear. Sliding a hand beneath my back, he lifted me and whipped my shirt over my head. His lips brushed over my brow.
"You wanted fast and rough. I want slow and sweet."
He levered over me again, this time settling into the cradle of my open arms and legs. The moment I felt his weight, his heat, his desire, I realized how much I wanted slow and sweet, too. The tears came then, finally, freed by the heat of his passion and the warmth of his love.
"You're everything to me,"
I cried. The words choked with tears.
"Eva."
Shifting his hips, Gideon tucked the tip of his penis into my cleft and pushed forward gently, taking time and care to fill me. His lips moved against mine, the stroke of his tongue somehow more erotic than the slide of his cock.
"Hold me,"
he whispered, his arms curved beneath my shoulders and his hands cupping the back of my head. I tightened my grip on him, his buttocks flexed against my calves as he drove into me, his sweat slicking my palms as I caressed his back.
"I love you,"
he murmured, his fingertips brushing my tears.
"Do you feel it?"
"Yes."
I watched the pleasure drift over his face as he moved within me. I held him as he groaned, his body quivering in orgasm. I kissed the tears away when he cried silently along with me. And I let go of my grief in the shelter of his arms, knowing that whether in joy or pain, Gideon was one with me.
"I can't get over this place."
Carrie set his hands on the railing that surrounded the wraparound deck and looked out over the water. Sunglasses shielded his eyes while the wind played with his hair.
"This is awesome. I feel like we're miles from anyone. And the view? Unfucking believable.
right? I leaned my butt against the railing, facing the house. Through the wall of sliding glass doors, I watched the Reyes family swarm like bees around the kitchen and great room, with Gideon held captive by my grandmother and both of my aunts. For me, the joyous mood was tinged with poignancy. My mother had never been a part of this extended group, and now she would never have a chance. But life went on. Two of my younger cousins chased Lucky around the sofas, while the three older ones played video games with Chris. My Uncle Tony and my dad were talking in the reading nook, while my dad bounced his fussy baby niece on his knee. Gideon was a man who feared family in a way he feared little else, and his heartbreaker of a face reflected bemusement and dismay whenever he surveyed the chaos around him. Since I knew him well, I also saw the hint of panic in his eyes. But I couldn't save him. My grandmother wasn't letting him out of her sight. Carrie looked over to see what had drawn my attention.
"I'm waiting for your man to sneak out and run like hell,"
I laughed. That's why I asked Chris to come, so Gideon could have some support. Our group, Gideon, me, Carrie, my dad, and Chris, had arrived at the beach around 10 in the morning. It was a little afternoon when my dad's family was brought over from their hotel with groceries in tow, so that my grandmother could whip up her famous pozole. She said it was known to soothe even the most wounded souls. Whether that was true or not, I knew firsthand that her rendition of the classic Mexican soupy stew was delicious.
"Chris is leaving him to fend for himself," Carrie drawled, "like you did."
"What can I do?" "Oh, my God," I grinned. "My Nana just handed him an apron." I'd been a little nervous when everyone showed up. I hadn't spent much time with my dad's family when I was little and had only made a couple of trips out to Texas with him after I started at UCSD. Every time I visited with them, the Reyeses had been a bit reserved with me, which made me wonder if I looked too much like the woman they all knew had broken my dad's heart. They had met my mother once and hadn't approved, saying my dad was reaching too high and that his love for her wouldn't end well. So when my grandmother had marched right up to Gideon, the moment she arrived and cupped his face in her hands, I'd held my breath right along with him. My grandmother had brushed his hair back from his face, turned his head from side to side, and pronounced that she saw a lot of my father in him. Gideon had understood the Spanish and replied in her native tongue. He took her statement as a high compliment. My grandmother had been delighted. She'd been speaking to him in rapid-fire Spanish ever since.
"Trey called me yesterday,"
Carrie tossed out casually. I looked at him. "Did he? How'd that go?"
"Did you say something to him, baby girl? To get him to reach out?"
Trying to look innocent, I asked. "Why would you think that?"
He shot me a knowing look, his mouth twisted wryly. "So you did."
"I just told him you're not going to wait around forever."
"Yeah."
He tried looking innocent, too. I had to hope I pulled it off better than he did.
"You know I'm not above taking a pity fuck, right? So thanks for hooking me up."
I gave him a gentle shove on the shoulder. "You're full of shit." Something had shifted for Carrie in the last few weeks. He hadn't turned to his usual self-destructive coping mechanisms, and since things were going good for him without them, I was holding out hope that he wouldn't backslide.
"True."
He flashed his brilliant grin, and it was genuine, rather than the cocky facade I knew too well.
"Although banging Trey is certainly something tempting to think about."
"Figure it's probably tempting for him, too, so I should use that to my advantage." "Are you going to see each other?" He nodded.
"He's going to come with me to the memorial at Stanton's on Monday."
"Oh," I sighed, hurting. Clancy had called Gideon and passed on that information earlier in the morning. Should I have tried to handle the memorial myself and spare Stanton? I just didn't know. I was still trying to accept the fact that my mom was really gone. After I'd cried for hours the night before, heavy guilt had settled in. There were so many things I'd said to my mother that I regretted and could no longer take back. So many times I'd thought of her with frustration and disrespect. Ironic, in retrospect, that her chief fault was loving me too much, as my stepfather had loved her, inordinately. "I tried calling Stanton," I said, "but I just get his voicemail."
"Me too." Carrie rubbed at his unshaven jaw. "I hope he's okay, but I realize he's probably not."
"I think it might be a while before any of us are okay." We settled into comfortable silence for a moment, then Carrie spoke.
"I was talking to your dad this morning, before we headed to the airport, about his plans to move to New York."
My nose wrinkled. I would love to have him near, but I can't help thinking how bizarre it would be if he worked for Gideon. He nodded slowly.
"You have a point."
"What do you think?" He shifted his body to face me.
"Well, just the pregnancy part of having a kid has changed my life, right? So multiply that by 24 years in your case, and I'd say a loving parent would do just about anything to make things better for their child."
Yep, something had definitely shifted for Carrie. Sometimes you just needed a hard jolt to bump you in the right direction. For Carrie, that was the thought of being a father. For me, it had been meeting Gideon. And for Gideon, it had been the possibility of losing me.
"Anyway,"
Carrie went on,
"he was saying that Gideon offered him a housing allowance and he was thinking he'd like to stay in the apartment with me."
Wow.
Okay.
There was a lot to process there. One, my dad was obviously taking the idea of working for Gideon in New York seriously. Two, my best friend was thinking about living separately from me. I wasn't sure how I felt about that. I had been worried Dad would have a hard time using that room after him and my mom, you know. I didn't think I could stay in the penthouse if I didn't have Gideon. Too much had happened between us there. I didn't know if I could handle remembering what I no longer had.
"Yeah, I'd wondered about that too."
Carrie reached out and touched my shoulder, a simple comforting touch.
"But you know, memories are all that Victor has ever really had of Monica."
I nodded. My dad had to have wondered more than once over the years if the love had always been one-sided. After that afternoon with my mom, maybe he realized that wasn't true. That'd be a good memory to hold on to. "So you're thinking about staying there," I said. "Mom told me she'd offered you that option." He gave me a smile tinged with melancholy.
"I'm considering it, yes. Kind of makes it easier if your dad's going to be there, too. I warned him it was likely there'd be a baby around now and then. I got the impression he might like that."
Looking back into the house, I saw my dad making silly faces to amuse my baby cousin. He was the only one of his siblings to have just one child, and I was an adult. I frowned as I watched Gideon walk to the front entrance. Where was he going with an apron tied around his denim-clad hips? He opened the front door and stood unmoving for a long minute. I realized someone must have knocked, but I couldn't see because Gideon was blocking my view. Finally, he stepped aside. Carrie looked over to see where my attention was and scowled.
"What's he doing here?"
As Gideon's brother walked in, I wondered the same thing. Then Ireland appeared behind him, holding a gift bag.
"What's up with the gift?"
Carrie asked.
"An unreturnable wedding present?"
"No." I noticed the design on the bag, which was definitely too colorful and festive for a wedding. "It's a birthday present."
"Oh, shit,"
Carrie muttered.
"I totally forgot about that."
When Gideon closed the door without his mother making an appearance, I realized Elizabeth was a no-show on her firstborn's birthday. A potent mix of sympathy and pain swamped me and caused my fists to clench. What the fuck was wrong with that woman? Gideon hadn't heard from his mother since confronting her in his office. Considering what the day was, I couldn't believe she could be so thoughtless. It made me realize I wasn't the only one who'd lost a mother in the past few days. Chris stood and went to his children, hugging Christopher while Ireland hugged my husband. She smiled up at him, offering the bag. He took it and turned, gesturing toward where I stood on the deck. Fresh and lovely in a delicately printed sundress, Ireland joined us outside.
Wow, Ava. This place is choice.
I hugged her. You like it?
What's not to like?
Ireland hugged Carrie, and then her lovely face sobered.
I'm really sorry about your mom, Ava.
The tears that were no longer very far away stung my eyes.
Thank you. I can't even imagine,
she said, and I don't even like my mom right now. Reaching out, I touched her arm. Regardless of how I felt about Elizabeth, I wouldn't wish the regret I had on anyone, especially Ireland. I hope you work out whatever it is. If I had my mom back, I'd take back a lot of the things I said and did. And because saying that aloud made me feel like crying, I excused myself quickly and headed toward the stairs, running down them to the beach, then out to the water. I stopped when my ankles were submerged, letting the sea breeze blow the tears away. Closing my eyes, I willed the grief back into the box I'd put it in for the day. It was Gideon's birthday, an occasion I wanted to celebrate because it had seen him enter the world and, eventually, my life. I jumped when warm, muscular arms slipped around my waist, gathering me back against a familiar hard body. Gideon set his chin on the crown of my head. I felt his chest expand and contract on a deep sigh when I wrapped my arms over his. When I pulled myself together enough to speak, I said,
"I'm surprised my Nana let you escape."
He gave a short laugh.
"She says I remind her of your dad. Well, she reminds me of you."
Which made it apt, I supposed, that I'd been named after her.
"Because I won't let you out of my greedy clutches?"
"Because even though she scares me, I can't seem to walk away."
Touched, I turned my head and rested my cheek against his heart, listening to its strong and steady beat.
"I didn't know your brother and sister were coming."
"I didn't either."
"How do you feel about Christopher being here?"
I felt him shrug.
"If he's not acting like a dick, I don't care."
"Fair enough."
If his brother's unexpected appearance didn't trouble Gideon, I wouldn't let it bother me.
"I've got some things to share with you,"
he said,
"about Christopher. But now's not the time."
I opened my mouth to contradict that, but caught myself. Gideon was right. We should have renewed our vows today, surrounded by friends and family. We should be celebrating his birthday and being so joyful there wasn't any room for sorrows and regrets. Instead, the day was shadowed by sorrow we had to hide. Still, there was no point in adding any more unpleasantness.
"I have something for you," I told him.
"I'm tempted, Angel, but we have too many people here."
It took me a beat to understand he was teasing me. "Oh my God, you fiend." I reached into my pocket and wrapped my fingers around his gift, which was safely shielded by a black velvet drawstring bag. It had a nice gift box, too, but I'd elected to carry the present in my pocket, hoping to be spontaneous and give it to him when the moment was right. I didn't want to give it to him along with his other presents. Turning to face him as I pulled the gift out, I offered it on both open palms.
"Happy birthday, Ace."
His gaze lifted from my hands to my face. There was a brightness to his eyes I saw only when I gave him something. It always made me want to give him more, give him everything. My husband so deserved to be happy. It was my life's mission to make sure he always was. Gideon took the pouch and untied the drawstring.
"I just want you to know," I began, trying to cover my nervousness,
"that it's crazy difficult buying a gift for someone who has everything, including a good chunk of the island of Manhattan."
"I wasn't expecting anything, but I always love what you give me."
I blew out my breath. "Well, you may not want to use it, which is totally fine. I mean, don't feel obligated to..." The platinum Vacheron Constantin pocket watch slid out into his waiting palm.
the polished case twinkling when the sunlight hit it. Biting my lower lip, I waited for him to open it and look inside. Gideon read the engraved words aloud.
Yours for all time, Ava.
It can hold a little picture over the inscription. I'd planned for that to be a photo from the renewal ceremony, but... I cleared my throat when he looked at me with such love it made everything flutter inside me. It's old school, I know. I just thought, since you wear vests, that it might be something you could use. Although I know you wear a watch on your wrist, so probably not, but he kissed me, shutting me up.
I'll treasure this. Thank you.
Oh, I licked my lips, tasting him. I'm glad. There's a fob that goes with it in the box. Placing the pocket watch carefully into its pouch, he tucked it into his pocket.
I have something for you, too.
Keep it clean, I teased him back. We've got an audience. Gideon looked over his shoulder and saw how many of our family members had stepped outside onto the deck. The caterer had stocked the outside kitchen with beverages and easy finger foods, and people were starting to poke through it all while the pork for the pozole cooked in the oven. He held out his fist, then opened it to show me the gorgeous wedding band in his palm. Large, round diamonds in a channel setting circled the entire band, shooting multi-hued sparks. My fingers covered my mouth, my eyes watering all over again. The salt-flavored breeze danced around us, carrying the plaintive cries of seagulls soaring over the waves. The rhythmic surge of the tide against the shore lapped over my feet, anchoring me in the moment. I reached for the ring with trembling fingers. Gideon's hand closed up and he grinned.
Not yet.
What? I pushed at his shoulder. Don't tease me.
But I always deliver,
he purred. I glared at him. The wicked smirk faded. His fingers brushed over my cheek.
I'm so proud to be your husband,
he said solemnly.
It's my greatest accomplishment to have been found worthy of that honor in your eyes.
Oh, Gideon, how he dazzled me. I was so overwhelmed by him, so filled by his love. I'm the lucky one.
You've changed my life, Ava. And you did the impossible. You transformed me. I like who I am now. I never thought that would happen.
You were always wonderful, I said fervently. I loved you when I saw you. I love you more now.
There aren't words to tell you what you mean to me.
He opened his hand again.
But I hope that when you see this ring on your hand, you'll remember that you shine as brightly as diamonds in my life, and you're infinitely more precious.
Pushing onto my toes, fighting the sinking of the wet sand, I sought out his mouth and nearly sobbed with joy when he kissed me. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. He was smiling as he took my hand and slid the ring on my finger, nestling it next to the beautiful Asher diamond he'd given me at our wedding. Applause and cheers jolted both of us. We looked at the house and saw our families lined up along the railing, watching us. The children were already running down the stairs, chasing Lucky, who was eager to get to Gideon. I understood that feeling all too well. For the rest of our lives, I would always run to him. Taking a deep cleansing breath, I let the hope and the joy push the guilt and grief away, just for a moment. This is perfect, I murmured, the words lost in the wind. No dress, no flowers, no formality or ritual. Just Gideon and me, committed to each other, with those who loved us nearby. Gideon caught me up and spun me, making me laugh with pure pleasure. I love you! I shouted, for all the world to hear. My husband set me down and kissed me, breathless. Then, with his lips to my ear, he whispered,
Crossfire.
16. It was difficult to watch Ava trying to console Richard Stanton, who was a shell of the man we'd spent the weekend with in Westport. He had been vibrantly alive then, seemingly younger than his years. Now he looked frail and stooped, his broad shoulders weighted by grief. A profusion of white flower arrangements covered every available surface in Stanton's sprawling penthouse living room, heavily perfuming the air. Photos of Monica were sprinkled liberally around the bouquets, showing Ava's mother in the best moments of her time with Stanton. Victor sat with Carrie and Trey in a smaller area, tucked away from the main floor. When we first arrived, there had been a moment when Ava's father and Stanton stood frozen and staring at each other. I suspected each of them resented what the other man had possessed of Monica. Victor had her love. Stanton had the woman herself. The doorbell rang. My gaze followed Ava and Martin as they walked together to answer it. Stanton didn't move from his wingback chair, his thoughts clearly turned inward. I'd felt his pain when he first opened the door to us, his body visibly jerking at the sight of Ava. It was good that my wife and I were leaving for the airport directly after. For a month, we'd be away from the city and out of the spotlight. Hopefully, by the time we returned, Stanton could bear the sight of the daughter who looked so much like her mother, the woman he'd loved. Cross? Turning my head, I found Benjamin Clancy. Like Detective Graves, Clancy's eyes held the knowledge of what I'd done to eliminate Nathan Barker as a threat to my wife. Unlike Graves, Clancy had helped me cover up my involvement, staging the scene of the crime and another unrelated scene to cast blame onto a dead man who'd paid for his own crimes with his life and wouldn't pay further for mine. My brows rose in silent inquiry. I need a minute. He gestured to the hallway beyond him without waiting for my agreement. Lead the way. I followed him to a library, taking in the shelves of books that lined the walls. The room smelled of leather and paper, the color palette a masculine blend of cognac and evergreen. Four distinct seating areas and a fully stocked bar invited guests to get comfortable and linger. Clancy shut the door behind us and sat in one of the two club chairs facing the unlit fireplace. I took the other. He got right to the point. Mrs. Stanton left behind over 25 years' worth of handwritten journals and a backup computer drive with electronic journal entries. She asked that I pass them along to Ava in the event of her death. Keeping my curiosity to myself, I said, I'll make sure she gets them. He sat forward, setting his elbows on his knees. Ben Clancy was a big man, his biceps and thighs thick with muscle. He wore his dark blonde hair in a severe military cut, and his eyes had the flat, cold lethality of a great white shark. But they warmed when he looked at Ava, like the loving glance of a very protective older brother. You'll need to judge the best time to give them to her, he said. And you may decide she should never see them. I see. So I'd have to go through them. It made me uncomfortable to think of doing so. Regardless, Clancy went on, you now have a new financial responsibility that you'll have to take over on Lauren's behalf. It's not inconsiderable, but you won't have any trouble managing it. I'd stiffened at the name he used, then grown more alert as he continued. Nodding, he said, you started researching her story after the Trammells died. But you'd cleaned most of it up. Out of the entire conversation thus far, that was the only thing that made sense. What I could. I dug into her past when Mr. Stanton became serious about their relationship. When I confronted her, she told me what I'm about to tell you, none of which is known to Mr. Stanton. I'd like to keep it that way. He was happy. Who she was didn't affect him, so he doesn't need to know. Whatever it was, Clancy had been swayed. Whether I would be remained to be seen. Clancy paused a moment. You'll get more out of the journals. I haven't read them, but Lauren's story is certainly more compelling than the dry facts I'll give you. I understand. Go ahead. Lauren Kittrie was raised in a small town on the outskirts of Austin, Texas. Her family was poor. Her mother abandoned her and her twin sister with their father, who worked as a hand on a local ranch. He was a busy man, not much interested in or capable of raising two beautiful, headstrong girls. Sitting back, I took a page from Ava's book and tried to picture two teenage Monicas. The image was more than striking. As you can imagine, he continued, they got noticed. Toward the end of high school, they'd caught the attention of a group of wealthy college students from Austin. Punks with a dangerous sense of entitlement. The leader was Jackson Trammell. I nodded. She married him. That was later, he said flatly. Lauren was savvy about men from the outset. She wanted out of the life her parents had, but she knew trouble when she saw it. She rebuffed him many times. Her sister, Catherine, wasn't as smart. She thought Trammell could be her ticket out. Unease caused me to sit back. How much of this do I need to hear? Against Lauren's advice, Catherine went out with him. When she didn't come home either that night or the next day, Lauren called the police. Catherine was discovered by a local farmer in his field, barely conscious, thanks to a toxic combination of street drugs and alcohol. She'd been violently assaulted. Although it wasn't proven, it was suspected that multiple individuals were involved. Jesus. Catherine was in bad shape, Clancy went on. The hallucinogenic drugs in her system, combined with the physical trauma of gang rape, caused permanent brain damage. She needed round-the-clock care for an indefinite period of time, something their father couldn't afford. Restless, I went to the bar, then realized a drink was the last thing I wanted. Lauren went to the Trammells, confronted them about their son, and what she suspected he'd done. He denied it, and no one was able to prove a connection to him, owing to a lack of physical evidence at that time. But he saw an opportunity and took it. Lauren was the one he'd wanted. So he got his parents to cover the expenses of basic care for Catherine, in return for Lauren herself and her silence about the assault. Turning to face him, I stared. Money could hide a multitude of sins. The fact that Stanton had effectively hidden Ava's past with sealed court files and non-disclosure agreements proved that. But Nathan Barker's father had let him pay for his crimes. The Trammells had gone out of their way to conceal their sons. Clancy straightened in his chair. Jackson wanted sex. Lauren negotiated with his parents to secure marriage, which she thought would provide some sort of guarantee that Catherine would always be looked after. I changed my mind about the drink and filled a tumbler to the halfway point with scotch. For a span of months, the situation between Lauren and Jackson was stable. They lived... stable? A harsh laugh tore at my throat. She just about sold herself to the man who orchestrated the gang rape of her twin sister. My God. I tossed back the liquor. Monica, or Lauren, had been stronger than any of us had given her credit for. But was it worth it to Ava to learn that, considering the horror of the rest of it? The situation was stable, Clancy reiterated. Until she met Victor. I caught his gaze. Just when you thought a situation was as bad as it could be, there was always worse. His jaw tightened. She became pregnant with Ava. When Jackson found out the baby wasn't his, he tried to take care of it with his fists. Although they lived in his parents' home, the older Trammells never interceded during arguments between the two. Lauren feared for the life of her child. She shot him. I ran my hands through my hair, wishing I could scrape the image out of my mind as easily. The undetermined manner of death. She killed him. Clancy sat quietly, letting me absorb that revelation. I wasn't the only one who'd killed to protect Ava. I began to pace. The Trammells helped Lauren get away with it. They had to. Why? During the time Lauren was with Jackson, she quietly documented anything and everything she could use against him later. The Trammells valued their reputation, and the reputation of their debutante daughter, Monica, and they just wanted Lauren and all the problems she'd caused gone. Lauren left with the clothes on her back and the understanding that, moving forward, Catherine's care was entirely her responsibility. "So it was all for nothing," I muttered. "She was right back where she started." Then all the information clicked into place. Catherine's still alive, which explained Monica's marriages to wealthy men and her preoccupation with money. All these years, she had to know how shallow her daughter thought she was, but she'd lived with it instead of telling the truth. Of course, I'd hoped Ava would never learn what I had done to Nathan. I feared she would think I was a monster. Clancy rose swiftly to his feet, despite his bulk. "And as I mentioned at the outset, Catherine's care is now your financial responsibility. Whether you disclose any of this to Ava is something you'll have to weigh." I studied him. "Why are you trusting me with this?" He straightened his jacket. "I saw you throw yourself over Ava when Hall opened fire. That, along with how you dealt with Barker, tells me you'll do anything to protect her. If you think it's in her best interest to know, you'll tell her when the time is right." With a brusque nod of his head, he left the room. I lingered, gathering my thoughts. "Hey." Pivoting at the sound of Ava's voice, I faced the doorway and watched her come toward me. "What are you doing here?" she asked, looking starkly beautiful in a simple black dress. "I was looking all over for you. Clancy had to tell me where you were." "I had a drink," I told her, giving her a partial truth. "How many drinks?" The slight twinkle in her eye told me she wasn't upset about it. "You've been in here a while, Ace. We have to take Dad to the airport." Startled, I glanced at my watch, realized I'd been lost in my own reflections for some time. It was an effort to come back to the present and stop mulling over Lauren's tragic history. I couldn't change the past. But what I had to do was clear enough. I would see to her sister's welfare. I would take care of her beloved daughter. In those ways, I would honor the woman Monica had been. And one day, if it seemed like the right thing to do, I'd introduce her to Ava. "I love you," I told my wife, taking her hand in mine. "You okay?" she asked, knowing my mood so well. "Yes." I touched her cheek and gave her a soft smile. "Let's go."
Epilogue.
What an odd choice for a honeymoon hotel.
I turn my head to find my mom stretched out on the lounger beside me on the deck. She's wearing a purple bikini, her skin lightly tanned and firm, her nails painted an elegant nude. Happiness fills me. I'm so glad to see her again.
It's a private joke, I explained, taking in the view of the Pacific Ocean glittering beyond the emerald ribbon of forest in front of us.
I told Gideon I have a Tarzan fantasy, so he found us a luxury treehouse.
I'd been delighted when I first saw the hotel suite suspended high above the ground in the arms of an ancient banyan tree. The panoramic views from its deck are indescribably beautiful, something Gideon and I enjoy whenever we step outside our leafy bower.
So you're Jane.
My mother shakes her head.
I won't even comment.
I grin, glad I can still shock her speechless on occasion. With a sigh, she leans her head back and closes her eyes, sunbathing.
I'm so glad your father has decided to move to New York. It gives me peace of mind to know he'll be there for you.
Yeah, well, I'm getting used to the idea.
It's harder accepting that my mom was a completely different person than who I'd thought she was. I debate bringing all of that up. I don't want to mar the joy of spending time with her again. But her journal entries were written as letters to me, and I can't help the need to respond.
I've been reading your diaries, I say.
I know.
Her answer is casual. I feel anger and frustration, but push them away.
Why didn't you share any of your past with me before?
I meant to.
Her head turns toward me. When you were little, I planned to one day. Then Nathan happened, and you were recovering from that. And you met Gideon. I always thought there would be time.
I know that's not completely true. Life continues. Something would always serve as an excuse to wait longer. My mom hadn't held out for a time when I could accept all she'd done for the sake of her sister. She'd waited until she could. It took a strong woman to make the choices and take the actions she had. It was good to know that about her, but more so to understand the source of her fragility. My mother had been a woman tormented by the path her life had taken. Killing Jackson had haunted her, because she'd hated him so desperately and felt joy when he was dead, even as she felt horror for the murder itself. Leaving my father behind had destroyed a vital part of her, as had living as if her sister Catherine didn't exist. My mother had been separated from two pieces of her heart, yet somehow managed to go on. Her overprotectiveness made sense to me now. She could not have imagined surviving if she lost me, too.
Gideon says we'll go see Catherine when we get back, I tell her.
We're thinking about moving her closer so she can be part of our lives. I'm bracing myself for that, knowing my aunt is my mother's twin.
My mom looks at me with a sad smile.
She'll be happy to see you. She's been hearing about you for years.
Really?
I know from the journals that my mom could rarely see Catherine in person, since my mom's husbands preferred to keep their lovely wife close. She'd had to settle for mailed letters and cards since emails and calls left a trail.
Of course. I can't help but brag. I'm so proud of you. Tears fill my eyes.
She tilts her face up to the sun.
For so long I was angry at the damage that had been done to Kathy. I never got back the sister I knew, but then I realized her mind protected her from that one night of hell. She doesn't remember it, and as simple as her thoughts are now, she finds a childlike joy in everything.
We'll take care of her, I promise. My mom holds out her hand and I take it.
Do treehouses have champagne?
She asks. I laugh and squeeze her fingers.
Sure.
I woke slowly, drifting lazily upward from the depths of sleep into full awareness.
Dappled sunlight filtered through the mosquito netting, cocooning the bed. I stretched, my arm sliding over to search for my husband, but he wasn't lying beside me. Instead, I found Gideon standing at the window in the rustic nook he was using as an office, talking on the phone. For a moment, I just soaked up the sight of him, disheveled and unshaven. He was so totally sexy, I could hardly stand it. The fact that Lucky sprawled at his feet only added to the yumminess. Gideon was wearing nothing but shorts, with the zipper tugged up, and the button undone so I could see that he was commando. It was about as far as he got when it came to dressing on our honeymoon. Some days the only thing he wore was sweat, which looked and smelled so damn hot on him I made sure he worked up more of it. As for me, I'd been surprised to find my packing augmented with a lot of strapless tube dresses and a noticeable lack of underwear. At any moment, I could find myself bent over, my skirt flipped up, and some part of my husband's anatomy sliding into me. We'd been on our honeymoon for 2 weeks, and in that time, Gideon had trained my body to anticipate his lust. He could arouse me in moments, satisfy us both nearly as quickly. It was deliciously, insatiably hedonistic. In between bouts of crazed monkey sex, we'd spent time talking and making plans for when we returned to the world. We watched movies and played card games, with Gideon teaching me how to play well. He did occasionally have to work, and when he did, I read the diaries my mother left behind for me. It had taken him a couple of days to tell me about them, but when he did, it was the right time. We talked about those a lot, too.
"The demand is unreasonable," Gideon said into his phone, eyeing me in my short silk robe. "There's wiggle room elsewhere. They need to be redirected to those fluid points."
Blowing him a kiss, I backed out and headed to the kitchen. I looked out onto the deck while the coffee brewed, at the copse of trees behind that and the ocean beyond that. Maybe we'd go to the beach today. We had a spot that was ours alone. For now, just being with each other was all we wanted. A tingle raced down my spine as I heard Lucky's paws hurrying across the hardwood floors. He would be following alongside Gideon, whom he worshipped. My husband was more than a little fond of Lucky, too. The nightmares were coming less and less frequently, but when they did, Lucky was handy to have around.
"Good morning,"
Gideon murmured, his arms encircling me. I leaned into him. "I think it's technically afternoon."
"We could go back to bed until evening,"
he purred, nuzzling my neck. "I can't believe I haven't bored you yet."
"Angel, if you're bored, I'll put more back into it."
I shivered at the image that came to mind with those words. Gideon was a vigorous lover on an average day. Since we'd been on our honeymoon, he had been even more so. I could swear his body was even more lean and ripped now than before, just from the exercise he got making love to me. Certainly I was happier with my body than I'd been in years. "Who is on the phone?" I asked. He took a deep breath.
"My brother."
"Really? Isn't that the third time in the last couple of weeks?"
"Don't be jealous. You're much sexier than he is."
I bumped him with my elbow. Gideon had told me about Hugh's files and that Chris had talked to Christopher. What was said during that conversation, we didn't know. That was something private between father and son. But whatever it was, Christopher had emailed Gideon twice, three times now, asking for advice. "Is it always business he wants to talk about?"
"Yeah, but the stuff he's asking, he already knows the answer."
"Anything personal?" Gideon had been assured by Chris that nothing of his abuse had been relayed to his brother, and my husband wasn't inclined to change that. Christopher had caused a lot of damage over the years, and without an apology, Gideon wasn't writing a blank check of forgiveness anytime soon. He shrugged.
"Are we having fun? How's the weather? That sort of thing."
"He's reaching out in his own way, I guess." I shrugged it off, too. "Want to head down to the beach?"
"We could."
Turning in his arms, I looked up at him. "Something else on your mind?"
I'd like to run a couple of things by you before I put work aside for the day.
Okay. Let me caffeinate first. I was smiling as we fixed our coffee. Once we reached his office, he woke up his laptop. The image on the screen was self-explanatory. I pulled out the chair and sat. More Gen 10 creative? I'd seen a dozen different ad concepts so far. Some of the messaging was clever, some was too clever, and some was just pedestrian.
Refinements to the last round,
he explained, setting one hand on the back of the chair and the other on the desk, surrounding me with warm skin and delicious masculine scent.
And some new directions.
Scrolling through the deck, I nodded at most. But one made me shake my head. That's a no.
I don't like it either,
Gideon agreed.
But why doesn't it work for you?
I think it's sending the wrong message. You know, the overwhelmed wife, mother, businesswoman can only find quiet time by distracting the family with the Gen 10. I looked at him. Women are capable of wearing those various hats easily. Let's show her playing the games with the family or enjoying the Gen 10 for herself. He nodded.
I said I wouldn't ask again, but since we're discussing women having it all, are you still feeling good about leaving your job?
Yes. There was no hesitation before answering. I still want to work, I qualified, and helping you with things you don't need help with isn't going to satisfy me for long, but we'll find a place where I fit. His mouth quirked. Riley,
I do appreciate your take, or I wouldn't ask for it.
You know what I mean.
I do.
He swiped and tapped on the trackpad, bringing up a presentation.
These are a few of the projects currently taking priority. When you have time, look them over and let me know which ones interest you most.
They all interest you, right?
Of course.